mean, there was obviously a huge relief to going to four, because once you're at four, you're like, you're going home.
Yeah, you can do it.
And then I got there just as Moses had woken up and he was about to leave. And he was kind of bleak about it, because I guess he knew the route and there's nothing worse than knowing the hill that you're about to climb.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, he was like, you know what? I can smell Kigali. And just the way that he said that, I was like, oh yeah, let's go. Like, leave it on the table now.
This is Dawn, a very unlikely ultra cyclist, and you're listening to the Just Bikes podcast from The Metal Set. Stay tuned as I'll be chatting with friends and fellow cyclists about all things bikes. That's ultra, adventure, gravel, mountain biking, and all sorts of type 2 fun. Hello, everyone. Dawn here. It's been a while, hasn't it? Did you miss me? I've been taking a little break from the Just Bikes podcast after returning home from Rwanda, a much needed mental health break, and also taking the time to get back on the bike myself, as I am now training-ish for the upcoming Sani to Sea mountain bike race in South Africa, which I will be doing at the end of April. Expect more on that on the podcast in due time. Thank you again for your patience in me releasing this wonderful episode into the world. I'm genuinely thrilled to be back with you today to continue the journey through the Race Around Rwanda series, as told by the athletes themselves. This one featuring the incredible Jenny Tuff. For those just tuning in, the Race Around Rwanda was a 1,000-kilometer self-supported bikepacking race that took place in early February. It was about 40% off-road and had about 18,000 meters of climbing. Last year, I was a competitor, and this year, it was reporting around Rwanda. Tech issues meant that I couldn't release all the episodes on the ground, so here we are. So, back to our guest today. You may know Jenny Tuff as an accomplished ultra cyclist, the fastest woman on a number of races, including the first Silk Road mountain race, no easy feat, and among many other hats she wears, she is also a published author. I know Jenny as a fellow Canadian with shared East Coast heritage, Newfie, if you know, you know, and also as a new friend that I met while in Rwanda. I saw her throughout the race. Her voice is included in the episode I did from CP2, and I sat down with her a day after she finished the race to talk about the experience. And note that this brief conversation I had with Jenny only touches upon her full story and what this race meant to her. A return to racing that had a lot of meaning. For those that should be aware or may find any of the topics triggering, we do touch upon eating disorders. To say that her story resonated with me would be an understatement, and although I'm not someone who's ever been diagnosed with an eating disorder, I would say that I've definitely had disordered eating. And from my own two eyes and ears, I know that this is a topic that does affect many women and men in sport, even if it's not recognized or discussed. Since returning from Rwanda, Jenny started a Substack where she goes into her story in more detail. I highly recommend that you check it out. It is linked in the show notes amongst other resources. Before we go into the interview, I also wanted to define at least one term, REDS, which is discussed, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. It describes what happens when athletes do not get enough fuel through food to support the energy demands of their daily lives and training. REDS can and does affect athletes of any gender and ability level. With this in mind, I promise that this chat is not somber, anything but. It's hopeful and fun, and Jenny's openness and vulnerability truly touched me. I'm immensely grateful to her and to all the athletes I spoke to for the race for their willingness to share their experiences. Later this week, I'll be sharing a new episode on a brand new race, Via Race, so please ensure that you hit follow so you don't miss that. Rest assured, I have some additional Rwanda episodes to get out, including with the Lantern Rouges, Bartmas and Bartmas, but you'll just have to follow the pod as not to miss them. Thank you again to everyone out there listening from over 61 countries now. Wow. I really do love sharing these stories with you guys. And if you find it in your heart to leave me a review, please do that. A 5-star rating and few fire emojis will warm my heart. Now on to the episode.
Jenny, how are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
Yeah. You finished yesterday or today?
Last night, 6 p.m., rush hour.
Yeah, and last I saw you, you were at checkpoint 3.
Oh, God. It was so hot.
It was hot.
Yeah.
It was a little cozy at checkpoint 3, though. Like, the vibes were really good at checkpoint 3.
Yeah.
Especially when you guys were there.
I think I might have seen some open beer. And yeah, and we were just having a nice little chat, weren't we? And I was like, well, I came here to hang out with people. It was a hard checkpoint to leave.
Yeah, but you did. I mean, you guys left there, and I think I told you after, like, I wasn't going to say anything about the next section, but I was happy, like, there was kind of a group of people that were
I'm really impressed that you didn't say anything, because I think, especially with girls, a lot of people will interject and say, it's not safe for you.
Yeah.
So I do really respect that you said that, or that you didn't say that. And you would have been completely right in your opinion. I was glad there were a few of us up on that gravel in the night, because it ended up going till about 1 a.m.
Yeah. And you started at 1 a.m.,
And I started at 1 a.m. that day. Yeah. It wasn't an intentional 24-hour push, but it just, that's how the cookie crumbled.
It just was.
Yeah.
That must have been hard for me.
It must have been hard for me. It was hard for me. Thank you.
So tell me. Just going back, like, why race around Rwanda? Because this is not, this is a little off the beaten track. It's not, like, European. It's not really well known as some of the bigger races or as long standing. So why this race?
I mean, I got into cycle touring to see the world. You know, I'm not a very competitive rider. I don't know what, I mean, I started racing actually more for the community. I never had illusions of grandeur that I'd be any good at this, but I really wanted to be involved in this community. So, I saw Rwanda, the race around Rwanda. I remember when it launched, and I thought that was really exciting, because it's a place I would have loved to go, and because it was a place I never thought of. And then something pops up on your radar, and you've never even thought of it before, and you're like, well, that's everything I've ever wanted, and I must do that. And so, yeah, it was partly wanting to have an adventure here, see a part of the world that I've never seen before, and partly knowing that you can see that part of the world while 100 other kids who are as weird as you are going to do it. And then you get to, like, meet that community and be involved in an organization. Like, so different from just coming here bikepacking on your own. And it was really special that way. So that was, I've wanted to do this race for a couple of years. So glad I made it happen.
Did it meet your expectations?
Yeah. I mean, I've never been anywhere like this. And I've not been in an event like this. I think the vibes were, and probably just because of the type of place that we're in, the vibes were very different from other races I've done. Mm-hmm. Not for better or worse, just different. I definitely got more than I came here for, it was a really special country and a really special group of people.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, I mean, last year was great as well, but I think something about this race kind of really forges strong friendships. Like, people kind of really connect with one another.
And you're so rooting for each other.
Yeah.
I never heard of anyone getting competitive. I mean, I'm sure the people at the very front were obviously racing, but I was in the 20s in terms of placement, not that anyone knew or cared. Mm. And there was no sense of, if you wanted to catch someone, it was literally because you wanted to talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, there was no sense of us racing against each other. Everyone was rooting for each other. You know, there's a group WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And everyone's on there just giving each other advice about where they found hotels and samosas and stuff. So it was a really sweet, supportive community.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's funny you say that, because I was thinking, nobody's really asked me what place they were or, like, was talking about it. Except at one checkpoint, two people did, and I was so out of it myself, even though I wasn't racing it.
Yeah.
They were like, where are we in the race? And I said, I don't know, 300.
Not very good. Not very good, actually.
But I was like,
you should probably give up.
No, I thought they meant kilometers. Oh. And they're like, no, we know. We wanted to know a place. I was like, oh, I don't know. I haven't been paying attention to that.
That's silly. I never heard anyone caring or noticing.
I don't think they cared so
Or, like,
much,
if we got told, I think maybe one checkpoint did tell me that I was in the 20s, and me and the other two guys that had come in at the same time, we were like, really?
Are we?
Yeah, and it was just kind of strange to know that there were people still behind us.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, well, that doesn't change anything about how I feel right now or what I'm going to do next.
Yeah. It is, it's a different type of race, I think, for sure. Talk me through, let's talk about the bad stuff first, if there is any bad stuff. What was the low light of the race for you?
Ooh, first day for sure. I was there when there was a crash early on, and that was quite sobering moment.
So I really, and it was a couple hours before I saw the media car again, and I could find out what had happened to the rider, because I was, yeah, I was there trying to get him help. And then the day kind of went on to be really hot, and I don't do well in the heat, and I was getting all the signs of heat exhaustion, like feeling like I'm going to vom and getting a bit shivery and all those kind of things and not eating. So it was just, yeah, you're only a few hours in, you've seen someone totally come a cropper, as we say in the UK, and I'm not feeling well and not eating and thinking like, what are you doing? You can't do this. Yeah. And so there was a lot of, day one was the day that I was absolutely not convinced I was going to finish. And then I had to kind of deal with that disappointment of thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going to finish. And, you know, I haven't finished a race in a really long time. And that's been a really, it's been really hard for me, as we say.
It's been really hard for you.
It's been really hard for me. And so, yeah, so that was a little moment. And then another rider came along and we rode together for a little bit and, you know, and we both felt low, but we didn't push that on each other. We just kind of started chatting about random things, and you know, you just, it's funny how you can just quickly
mood change.
Yeah, things can just quickly change. And so just chat to another guy, and we just got through it together until we found a place to get Coca-Cola, which solves everything.
It does. It solves many, many a problem. I think it's funny you say that, because I thought about this year as well as last year as well. A lot of people kind of got to checkpoint one. Maybe not so much this year, but last year definitely people were like, I'm not going to finish this race. You know, after the first day, it's kind of like they just got smacked in the face.
It's exactly that. You know, and like best sports quote in the world is everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
And the first 100 kilometers of any ultra race are a punch in the face where you go like, and especially because everyone goes too hard. And so then you're going, oh my gosh, is this the pace? Do I have to do this for like a week?
Yeah.
I can't do that.
And I mean, it was very hot on day one.
It was stupid hot. Yeah.
And then I last year I was like, first day was day hot, was very hot. It was like day hot.
And day hot.
And then it was like day cold the next day. But that's what it seemed like this year as well.
You should do the weather.
Yeah. Today is day hot.
Yeah.
Day really hot.
Yeah.
But I think someone, I remember someone posted on their stories, like their Wahoo kind of data, and it said 49 degrees or something like
no,
that.
No, that's not okay.
I don't know. It was hot. I mean, I live in the Middle East and it was hot.
Yeah. Me. No, I don't want to know anything about temperatures like that. No.
Yeah. But anyways, okay. So low light. What was the highlight?
Getting to the finish. I really didn't know I could do it. You know, it's been so long since I finished a race. I basically haven't finished a race since I got diagnosed with Reds and had to go deal with the fact that I had an eating disorder, which wasn't something I would think I was really prepared for. And it was so much harder than I thought it was going to be. You know, I had to change everything about my life. I had to, you know, anyone that's gone through eating disorder recovery, it's not just eating and food. You have to change your personality. You have to change the voices in your head. You have to change your triggering environments. And being an ultra sport and dealing with that, you know, it's not conducive, like it doesn't go to it well together. And I did a lot of soul searching and realized like, I still love ultra cycling. I don't want to give it up. I want to find a way back, but I have to do it as someone who doesn't have an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And that took so much more work than I was prepared. Mm. Like, you know, it took me 2.5 years to finally finish a race again. And when I was coming into the finish yesterday, or the guy I was riding was saying that we were going to finish by tonight, and I realized, actually, barring total catastrophe, I was going to finish. Then I got very cry on my way in. It took a lot of work. Now I'm going to cry again.
No, don't. You can let it out.
Okay, thanks. It was really hard for me.
Well, I mean, I was wondering that this year, because I think, you know, I've been kind of tracking moods and emotions as people, like, obviously trying not to trigger them. I wasn't going to ask them if it was something that must have been hard.
Just getting up in their grill.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the finish is always kind of a bittersweet moment, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. But this one, I think, I know that I've had big wins in the past, but this one meant more. Mm. Like, really not under, like, overselling it. This one really meant more, because even though it was a casual race, by all means, the way that I approached it, I just rode it to finish and not to try and compete. You know, it wasn't just the fight that I did over the last 5 days. It was a 2.5 year fight to get me to a place that I can finish a race again. So, oh, really, I'm going to cry. I'm
proud of you. I'm taking it down. I didn't mean to.
That's okay.
I'm not trying to like Oprah anyone here with Barbara Walters.
It's fine. Yeah.
No, but you should be so proud. Like, I'm proud of
you.
Yeah,
I am.
Because I know, I think a lot of times, you know, people do these races and stuff, they just see the moments. They just see, you know, the toughness and the resilience and stuff like that. And of course that's there, but like, nobody, I think, realizes how much goes into that, you know,
and especially if you've had, it's different for everyone and every time of your life. Like, there were times when I could coast through these things, not coast, but like, you know.
Yeah.
And for all this time, I had so many DNSs over the last 2.5 years, races I kept signing up for and not getting far enough into my recovery and not being able to pull it off. And it was, you know, it felt like an identity change for a long time. I had to say, like, I might just have to watch this go away. I might just have to be someone that doesn't get to do something that I was convinced I loved so much.
Mm.
And that's, it's a really hard thing to accept, and I decided not to accept it. But, then I had to come here back to an environment that was very much part of me becoming that destructive person I used to be.
Mm.
And I had to come to this environment saying, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to do this completely differently. And... yeah, I am incredibly proud that I got through this.
You should be.
And that I feel good today, and I ate food today despite not riding my bike. You know, that's something that in the past I didn't actually do. So, I feel like when people recover from eating disorders, a lot of us look at it, it's not like there's a finish line that you say, I am recovered and I am past tense eating disorder. Like, you know you have it for life. You know those voices are going to be there for life. So I'm not saying I'm recovered, but I know that I've got a handle on it now.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't know I could say with confidence until basically last night at 6 p.m. So, here I go crying.
No, it's okay. I think it's not something that a lot of people talk about, you know, and I think we've all seen it as women in cycling. You kind of see it low key, you know, and people don't
recognize
it.
Well, it's almost glorified.
It.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of mine was exercise dependency, which if you're an ultra sport, how do you separate knowing what is exercise dependency and what is the volume of training you genuinely need to accomplish?
Yeah.
And it's so glorified, and that's why it's really easy to happen, is because everyone in your life congratulates you for your very strict behavior.
Yeah.
And that makes it really hard to come out of. And obviously a lot of people in these races, they might do things that to you, you know, either might be blatantly unhealthy or maybe these people can handle doing it.
Yeah.
But they'll be talking about it and they'll be giving that advice or whatever, and you just have to sit there and go, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me. Don't take that in. I'm going to approach this differently.
Yeah. I think, like I was looking, I posted earlier about George, you know, who'd rode his bike. And I think a lot of things, and this is what I love about ultra cycling too, is that there's many ways to the finish line, you know, like many, many ways. The right way, you know, it's not so much like, this is the way you have to do it. This is the right way. You know, it's like the way that works for you. And that's from your planning to your mental preparedness to kind of, you know, what you need to do on a race to make it.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought of ultras as like, we all have a different hand of cards and it's just how you play that hand. And it's so fascinating. It's a wonderful thing that you'd be riding with people who are so different from you, both in terms of demographic, in terms of what they have access to and how they approach racing and how they train. Like, you can just be totally different, but you're riding neck and neck. And, you know, it's really fascinating. And I think it's a really good thing for anyone on the outside to know about this, is that very different people from very different lives get to the finish line. It's all about playing your deck of your hand, basically.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I've been watching everybody and I'm like, oh, maybe, but I've said to you before, I don't have it in me right now.
You've got
to
have so much mojo. I'd say that's the number one
requirement. You need
it
deep in your belly, I think,
It's not all about the training and the getting your bike right and stuff. I mean, if the mojo isn't there, it's just not the right time. And that's fine as well. You ebb and flow, don't you?
It's true. It's seasons. I think it's seasons.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of move. I'm in my mountain bike season now.
Yeah, exactly. You're in mountain biking right now, and that might be you.
Yeah.
Or you might want to do another one. Like, you don't know, and it's fine. Like, the important thing is that you have a mojo for something.
So I'm going to ask this. Which checkpoint had the best vibes? Switching it up
vibes
a little bit.
We had a good giggle at CP3, so that was nice. I'm going to go with CP2 because it was the most busy when we were there, and you gave me a nice hug even though I had just been rained on, and I appreciate you were like, well, I'm wearing my Gore-Tex jacket, so I guess I could wipe this off later. I think too, because there were quite a lot of riders in.
There was, yeah.
And I loved that. Like, you all come in and you're like, guys, what happened to you on that last bit? You know, you all just compare notes and rehash things that you've just seen, just because you need to be like, is that real?
That was a tough day too for everyone, I thought.
Yeah, it was technical.
There was rain, I think. It was dreary. I remember, like, it was a dreary day.
Yeah, I think that actually helped quite a lot of us Northerners.
Yeah,
it was back in my comfort zone. Like, rain, okay, like my
cloud,
my delicate Scottish skin can deal with that. Yeah, it's the sun that I don't know about.
Yeah. Checkpoint with the worst vibes. I think I know the answer to this.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to.
No, not because I mean, okay. It's more like, I think, place in the race. I have to say, like, all of the volunteers at each of the checkpoints.
Oh my gosh,
amazing.
And so that's my notes. Is that I think four was maybe not pumping up the vibes, but the volunteer was the most pumped up. Except that he told me I was 6 hours from the finish and I was 11 hours. Thank you very much. Love proving men wrong, actually. So I got him. I think four, there were a lot of kind of heads and hands kind of vibes going on. Like,
I think fatigue had set in.
Yeah, when will this end? And the hotel isn't, like, I think people were ready for the Ritz, you know.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people were like, I want to be treated better than this right now. Why am I still in Rwanda and having Rwandan things?
I mean, look, that hotel had a lovely pool out the back.
I didn't know there was a pool.
You did.
If I had known, I think they would have had to hold me back.
I think a lot of people would have come out and jumped into the pool.
Yeah. It would have been better than the shower I got that night, actually.
No, I mean, and that section, like the section, the checkpoint 3 to checkpoint 4 was the longest stretch of the entire race without a checkpoint.
Yeah.
It was some pretty challenging. It was, I mean, it was that very challenging.
Yeah, it was a doer, that bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there was also a huge relief to going to 4 because once you're at 4, you're like, you're going home.
Yeah, you can
do it. And then I got there just as Moses had woken up and he was about to leave. And he was kind of bleak about it because I guess he knew the route and there's nothing worse than knowing the hill that you're about to climb.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he was like, you know what? I can smell Kigali. And just the way that he said that, I was like, oh, yeah, let's go. Like, leave it on the table now.
Yeah. Full gas. What do you think of Rwanda? Like, I mean, this is your first time here, right?
Yeah, I've had a very lucky life to travel quite a lot. I can really tell you I've never been anywhere like this. Nothing about this reminded me of any place I've ever been. It was just so mind-blowing. I think being told that it was such a safe country was something I needed some convincing on because it's also a very population-dense country.
Yeah.
And I'm still just kind of amazed at the time that we've just had and how careless we are, like, razzing around on our expensive bicycles and
just
leaving them around, and we're getting tired and we're getting sloppy, and at all times we're being really taken care of by these people, and, you know, they're definitely all watching you and they're all very close, but there's so much love. And yeah, so the nature and the views, obviously stunning. Unbelievably beautiful course, but the people really, I think my heart's been warmed.
Yeah, it really is magical here.
Yeah, it's really like nothing I've ever experienced.
Leaves an imprint. We were already talking about, like, we need to buy a place like Kivu.
Yeah, you're getting sucked in.
Yeah, no, I'd love to.
Love
to come back here all the time and ride my bike. Anything really funny stand out kind of happened to you on the event? All these, I mean, I feel like Ultra, you know, there's always some kind of quirky thing goes on. And even this year when I was driving around in the car, like, kind of following him, and I was like, oh yeah, this is where this happened. I didn't even remember it, like, after, you know, like, it kind of all comes back. But is there anything?
You know what, today, even though I've finished, so obviously for the last 5 days I've had children chasing me relentlessly. Just today I was walking out to get a coffee and a little girl ran up the street and gave me a hug.
Aw, that's so sweet.
I couldn't believe it. That's going to be my, like, leaving Rwandan memory is some little girl came and gave me a hug.
That is so sweet.
I know.
Yeah. The kids here are so, like, I know, I mean, I've said
it's
this
something.
Before. Yeah, there's something. They're everywhere. There's a lot of children.
Yeah, I don't know what the school
excited.
Hours are like here, but wow, the kids are around a lot.
And they're very excited to see
they're
you.
They're very
always.
Excited, Mzungu.
Yeah, Mzungu.
It's going to ring through my head for a little while.
Like, you look in the mirror, sometimes you're like, Mzungu.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What advice would you give to any women or anyone thinking to join the race or thinking about coming to Rwanda to cycle or do this race?
Yeah, I would say just to back yourself.
Mm.
Just know that, you know, lots of different people do it. Again, you can look at these things from the outside. You can see the people that won and say to yourself, I'm not that, and so maybe I can't do it. But yeah. You've got to look at the rest of the field. You've got to look at how many different people make this work and the adversity that they come through, and just know that, you know, you deserve to be here. You belong here. You'll be welcome here. This is such a good vibe. Like, this crew, like, no one gets laughed out because they're not wearing the right shirt or something. Like, you know, this is a really welcoming space. So, you know, if you're curious about it, yeah, you do have to do the training, but, like, just know that you do belong here.
You do, and, yeah.
And it's very, it is achievable. It really is. Like, back yourself, believe in yourself.
Yeah, I love that. You're heading out tonight.
Man.
I'm so glad we met.
I know, I'm really glad that we met.
We need to hook up somewhere else in the world and go riding together.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure, because we've got shared heritage.
Yeah, exactly. Newfie girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we totally do. I mean, before you go, and we'll stay in touch, obviously, but, like, any last parting words or anything we didn't touch upon that you want to share about the race or yourself or Rwanda?
I think just that I'm really, really grateful that I'm back in this community after a bit of a hiatus. This experience has really shown me that I don't want to lose this.
No.
Yeah.
And you belong here.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's not cry again. I'm going to cry again. Here I go. I'm going to cry on the plane tonight.
Aw. Well, thank you so much for joining and sharing all of that with us.
I'm really glad that you were out on the course.
Yeah. It was such an experience seeing
it. It was amazing coming into checkpoints and seeing you there and being like, oh, okay, I'm going to get a good Canadian girl hug.
Yeah, at some point I'm like, are we nuisance? Like, I was thinking,
not at all. Not at all. I mean, you saw how quickly I ran out of those checkpoints. I was there for ages every time that you were around. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no, it was really nice.
It's been amazing seeing this from the other side, you know, and I'm like, wow, I did that last year. Like, that was me. Because everyone is so inspiring. Like, I'm so touched by everyone, and everyone shows such heart. And yeah, it was just a really beautiful experience, even, you know, not coming to race, but just kind of being around you guys. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, you're a big part of this experience.
Oh, well,
it's all part of the community.
Well, we're gonna see each other again later
here
somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll have a safe flight tonight.
Thank you so much.
If you like this episode, why not give us a little kudos? 5 stars only, wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, sharing is caring. Thank you for listening.